Welcome, or welcome back, to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz, along with Maine Public's Statehouse Bureau Chief Steve Missler and Chief Political Reporter Mal Leary. For this edition, we're going to return to a couple of issues that continue to generate political news. In a few minutes, legislation that could challenge an electric transmission line, and by extension, Democratic Governor Janet Mills. But first, I asked Steve Missler about recent tweets by the vice chair of the state Republican Party, Nick Isgrow, that are continuing to roil the GOP.
You know, last week, of course, he had used the official, or was given access to the Maine Republican Party's official Twitter account and posted this series of tweets that were basically making the assertion that Mainers should be allowed to not vaccinate their kids if we just stem the tide of immigrants who supposedly are not vaccinated, even though people entering this country legally are required by law, by immigration law, to be vaccinated. And so this obviously created a huge backlash on social media. It was immediately condemned by the Senate Republican caucus, although there was some blowback to them taking that position behind the scenes. There was some party activists that had reached out to chastise Senator Dana Dow for taking that position, which led to the question of whether or not he was going to backtrack on it or not. But he didn't. He stayed firm in condemning those remarks, saying that Isgrow should never have been given access to the official Twitter account. But then there was this whole other reaction, which was avoidance, which we reported on Tuesday, where elected Republicans in the legislature just didn't want to deal with this controversy at all. But I think that pulling back from this, the big question, I think, is whether this is the direction that Maine Republicans want to go. I mean, first of all, somebody in a position of power decided it was a good idea to give Isgrow the keys to the official Twitter account. Why is that significant? Because you can argue that the party's Twitter account is essentially representative of the views of the party writ large. Now, clearly not in the Maine, everybody in the Maine GOP is okay with that, yet Isgrow's tweets remain posted as we speak. And the party has made no attempt to renounce them. And it's basically said, hey, we didn't write them. This guy did. And I don't know that Isgrow is going to continue to be able to use the Twitter account, but it does just raise a whole bunch of questions. And of course, how he got into this position, and I want Mal to talk about that, and what do elected Republicans do going forward if this person is going to be claiming to speak for them?
This really goes to who is the Republican Party of this year, of 2019, of 2020. Governor LePage out of office, but he's still trying to control the Republican Party. It's that simple. He maneuvered to get Nick Isgrow elected as the vice chair. He continues to make himself available on some talk radio shows to talk about various issues, taking pot shots at Governor Mills. And the question becomes, is that where the Republican Party wants to go as they're looking forward to 2020? When, in terms of legislative Republicans, they want to try to get some of these seats back, if not regain control of either the House or Senate. And right now, they're spinning their wheels because they really don't have a cohesive Republican philosophy. And part of that is exacerbated when you have Nick Isgrow putting out those tweets where you have a significant number of Republicans in both the House and Senate who are going, what the hell is that?
Mm-hmm. Isgrow had an interesting defense, though, that I heard the other day, which is essentially he said, look, I'm the mayor of Waterville. I've been duly elected more than once. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump is the president of the United States. My views are not out of the Republican mainstream.
But what happens is he's speaking for all Republicans as vice chairman. Mm. He was in a much better position as the mayor of Waterville, as a Republican activist, to say anything he wanted to say about these various issues. But once he takes on the mantle of leadership, where he's supposed to be working for all Republican candidates, that's where you need to have a little bit of caution about what you say.
You do raise a good point, Erwin, because he did say that. But to build off a little bit what Mal is saying, I mean, I think it's pretty unusual for the party to be sort of announcing positions, especially extreme ones where not everybody in the Republican Party is necessarily on board. I mean, let's just go back a little bit to how this whole thing started. It was basically Nick Isgrow saying that Mainers shouldn't be compelled to vaccinate their children. That might be a view in some elements of the Maine Republican Party. I don't think it's a widely held view in the Maine Republican Party. So for him to go out and basically say, hey, this is the position of the Maine Republican Party, I think is unusual. If it were just him saying it, maybe not so. He's entitled to have that opinion. He's entitled to share it. What the tension here is that he claims to be speaking for the party writ large. And I think that that's also unusual because I have not seen the Maine Republican Party doing that in the past, unless it's an issue that they all can agree on. Governor Mills is spending too much money or
ranked choice voting.
They are united on these fronts, right? So it makes sense for them to come out and make fiery statements to that effect on that issue and on immigration too, and to have the party leading when you have elected officials in the Maine Republican Party who are not comfortable with that position is what's unique about this situation. I just sort of wonder, do you think that he actually believes this? Or is it just a utility that will help elevate him? Because he obviously has political ambitions. Or is it a little bit of both?
It would be one thing if Nick Isgrow had kind of emerged from no place. But he's emerging in the era of Trump. He's emerging after 8 years of LePage. One could see, whether he believes in what he says or not, you could certainly see him thinking that this is a workable strategy in this environment.
Well, there's no question that those issues play to the LePage base, which seems to be crucial to Isgrow as well as to LePage. The effort there is to try to get those folks solidified. And again, if you remember, the first election of LePage was by plurality. He didn't hit a majority, didn't hit it the second time, but got really close. Their whole strategy is aimed at getting the plurality of voters, not the majority of voters. I think that's going to drive a lot of these issues where they're trying to energize their base, because elections is all about turnout. And if your base is energized, you get your voters to the polls and you win the election, even though you may not have, in terms of polling, that broader support.
I mean, there was a time when Nick Isgrow was not a Trump supporter. He was not. I mean, there are social media posts that have since been deleted where he was very critical of President Trump. Well, that was before Trump was elected president. And so now you're seeing a recalibration of his views. And so maybe that's why you're seeing more of this. Maybe that's why he's been given the keys to the main GOP account, because he's a spokesman for those ideas. I don't know.
Well, let's give a little equal time to the Democratic Party. Seth Berry, legislator, has legislation in the hopper that would affect this central Maine power transmission line. Steve, why don't you go ahead and talk about that?
Seth Berry, of course, has been on CMP's case for the last year and a half, maybe even longer than that. He's been critical of their storm response from the 2017 windstorm. He's been leading the charge as they've had a myriad of billing issues that have really upset a lot of people in this state. Now he's riding herd on what appears to be a pretty significant opposition campaign to the transmission project. Now, what he's proposing here is basically that this transmission line should not be able to go forward without local approval from all the towns that it passes through. Well, that's significant, because a lot of the towns that where this thing proposes to go through have taken votes that are opposed to it, a lot of them. And some of those towns are very small. And what he's saying is that we should have all of them be on board before we can permit a project like that. Now, politically, this is interesting because, of course, Governor Janet Mills has taken a position that she's supportive of the project. Now, if this bill were to pass, and it could, because you don't even need all the Democrats in the legislature to approve it, because there's been Republican support for Seth Berry's bill.
Yep.
So this is a bipartisan initiative. So we could be put into a position where a Democrat in the legislature is putting a bill that will get to the governor's desk where she'll be forced to veto it. There may not be enough votes in the legislature to override that gubernatorial veto, but it's certainly another point of tension between some Democrats and certainly the legislature and the governor who has been supportive of the project. I think that's the politics of that are very interesting, and it'll be interesting to see how they play out as that bill moves forward. Of course, it hasn't had a public hearing yet.
And the reality is this goes to that same issue that we've seen in past Democratic administrations, where the Democratic governor sometimes has more problem with rank-and-file Democrats than they do with Republicans. And I think that Janet Mills is seeing that now because she's tried to put together a very conservative approach in terms of, I can only do so much. I've only got so much money, and I'm parceling it out. That's leading to criticism from the Republicans because they're saying you're not funding some things with enough money, such as the Medicaid expansion. But at the same time, she's trying to placate the progressives who want to do more and more and more in terms of legislation. Now, to Seth Berry's bill, I mean, the more interesting bill to me that Seth Berry's got in is the one that would take over the utilities in Maine and create a public power authority to run all of the distribution facilities in the state. He just had an email out pointing out that with all this tremendous storm damage that's going on out in the Midwest, most of those utilities are covered because guess what? They're some sort of quasi-state, quasi-municipality entity, which is covered by the emergency aid that you can get from FEMA. Central Maine Power is not, Emera is not. So that's why we as ratepayers end up picking up the tab for some of these huge storm damages.
Yeah. Gordon Weil, who's a former state energy department head here, has been one of the people who has advocated for a public utility.
He's also been critical of the CMP transmission line project. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think his criticism is that the stipulation, the money that should be paid out up front, because over time, the value of those millions of dollars that would come to Maine depreciates because of inflation, et cetera.
The real issue that seems to bother a lot of folks about that transmission line is simply the fact that you've got this relatively cheap hydropower coming from Canada, and not 1 kilowatt is going to be used here in Maine. It's all passing through to Massachusetts. Now, that does not set well with a lot of folks who are saying, okay, I might be willing to sacrifice some of the scenic beauty, but we ought to get something out of it, and that ought to be cheap power. And that's not in this package of goodies that CMP is willing to give up.
So before we leave this topic, Mal, I was curious to ask you, on Seth Berry's bill, are there any signs that the governor has made or is going to make any effort to try to make sure that measure does not pass?
I think that there will be that going on. I have not picked it up yet, but I can't envision that she wants to have the battle that Steve's talking about, you know, the public battle. There's been a number of Democrats in leadership positions who've told me privately, we're going to have some bloody battles, but they're going to be behind closed doors.
Right.
And I would put this in that category, that there may well be a real bloody battle down in the cabinet room with people hollering at one another over this particular piece of legislation that we'll only hear rumors about. It won't be down on the floor. It won't be done in committee.
I did a little bit of poking around yesterday just to get a sense of whether what you're asking is taking place. I wasn't able to get very far with that inquiry, but I did talk to some folks that are supportive of the project, and they see that bill as a very credible threat. And the reasons why are the ones that we've been talking about all along. CMP is a very unpopular company right now because of the storm response, because of the billing issues, and now because of this. And so when you have that critical mass of opposition, a bill like Seth Berry's is a problem. But I think it's a little bit too early to determine whether or not they're going to be able to head that off.
Steve Mistler there, along with Mal Leary, and that's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. The Pulse podcast is posted each Friday afternoon, and you can access it anytime at mainepublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Past podcasts are also available. The Pulse also airs Sundays on Weekend Edition, and we air an abbreviated version Mondays on Morning Edition. Willis Ryder Arnold is our producer. Music is by Rob Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz. Join us again soon.